Good afternoon, everyone. It is 2 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, August 21st, 2025. I would like to call the Ponsinla Town Council to order. I would ask everyone to please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Let the record reflect that all council members are present and in chambers. Additions, corrections, or deletions to the agenda. Mike, do you have any?
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I have one regarding item 8B, and that's the salary study. We want to change this to a presentation of the preliminary results. And so essentially, we know there's a lot of questions about this in the community. And we want to give ample time for everyone to study it thoroughly, and make sure everyone has a chance to understand it. So we're not going to be asking the council for any kind of action at this time, but we do want to go ahead and present the results.
Thank you, Mike. And I have one modification, 13D. This was an item that I was presenting at the request of two residents who had asked the council to consider hours of business operation in the town, specifically overnight. And they have withdrawn that request, but 13D also covered another item, decibel levels, which I would like to still have a short discussion on. So 13D is modified to the extent that we have one part of it withdrawn. Does anyone have any other additions, corrections, deletions, or modifications? Seeing none, I move to adopt the agenda as modified on the record.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The agenda is adopted as modified. We are up to citizen participation. And this is your opportunity under our rules to come to the podium and to speak on a matter that is not on the agenda. Please make sure you have filled out a pink slip and provided to our clerk, Kim Trebano, who is seated in the front. We ask that you begin by stating your name and address for the record. Addressing our meeting is just one way for you to communicate with council. If I may, I'd like to call your attention to the five-minute clock at the center of the dais. When you contact a council member outside of this meeting, there is no clock and no limitation. The contact information of each of your council members and the town's professional staff can be found on our website and is available on request. So if I may, I will begin with Tony Hines. Tony?
Tony Hines, 4621 South Atlantic Avenue, Unit 7703. When we moved here 11 years ago, the very first thing the realtor said was that the police are tough on speeding. And I kind of like that. I'm okay with that. That kind of got less during COVID. I understand why. I think it's coming back up. I'm seeing traffic stops. What I'm concerned about is I'd like to have Ponsinla to have that reputation for people in crosswalks. I have a view with a 7-Eleven crosswalk. It's scary. People try and cross. Some driver, and it may be the worst thing, one driver stops. Another one doesn't. It seems like they're either trying to calculate that the person will be out of their way by the time they get there. So don't cough, don't drop anything, walk a little faster. I will say there was an officer up there in one of the condo parking lots between the crosswalks today. So I know they are making an effort. I understand tickets almost cost the town, but I'd be okay with that. Matt Reinhardt is here, and I'd also like to poke the county in the eye. Up in South Daytona, or Daytona Beach Shores, Wilbur, they have lights on two lane portions of the road. When it gets down here, they did put lights at North Turn. But where it's four lanes at Winter Haven and five lanes at the 7-Eleven, you're dependent on the kindness of strangers. That's what I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tony. We've taken notes on this. Thank you. I do have for SB 180, mine Pontikowski, but it's, since it's an agenda item, if you don't, thank you. Okay. And Steve Field?
Steve Field, 6 Morrisville. Good afternoon, everyone. Hopefully you're having a good day. I'd like to talk a little bit about, I had a very good meeting with the accounting staff and Mike last week, and I really appreciate all the insight that they provided. And we had a two-way conversation. So I've been in business for 40-some years as a director of finance, and I always based next year's budgets on the current year actuals. I don't see that here. So I'm looking at the financial report from July. I'm sure you've all looked at it and seen it. And it seems like under the general fund, we've spent 77.46% year to date. Well, based on a 10 month, we should have been, if you were on budget, it should have been 83%. So basically, we're under budget by 5.7%. If we hold that for the rest of the year, we'll have a savings, a reduction of the budget by $626,000. A nice number, just like we did last year. We had a significant reduction last year. We just socked that away in the reserves. Well, I'd like to suggest something different this year. Let's put that $626,000 in a specific reserve for budget overruns in the future years. Okay? But let's take a look at what we could do. Based on the assessed base going up 4.6%, right? And homestead being 59% of the assessed base, right? That non-homestead being 41%, or, and they would be charged at the 4.6%. If doing nothing, we see almost a 3.7% increase in the budget. But do we really need that? Or could we go back? Could we go back? And it's whatever information we got this week, that for every 0.1% we do reduce the millage, it's a savings of $132,000 to the homeowners. Okay? So I'd like to suggest that we hold next year's budget to 3.6% increase from this year's actual. And if we do that, the target budget for next year will be $10,762,000. Guess what happens when we do that? We're able to go back to a millage rate of 5.9%, what we did for 5 or 6 years. Just food for thought.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fields. We appreciate this. And Shannon White?
Shannon White, 39 Coastal Oaks Circle. I'd like to address the fact that the 4.62% property appraisal assessed value increase, we've had 10 years plus of property values increasing. I mean, that's kind of unheard of, especially at the rate that we've had it. And to continue to look without really controlling our costs and depending on this increase in values is not sustainable. Recent articles in the news, Florida housing market cooling, housing affordability crisis in the U.S. of A. stacking of fixed costs, property taxes, and insurance on the rise. Foreclosures up 13%. Those are warning signs. And like I said, the trends really aren't sustainable. And Ponce Inlet is very unique. Whether we want to compare ourselves to 29 other cities or counties or whatever, Ponce Inlet is very unique. We are totally dependent, or almost totally dependent, on property taxes. We don't have the luxury or the benefit of commercial business and sales tax income. It's very limited. There was a graph shown when we were going through the budget process that ranked all these, you know, municipalities, towns, whatever, and Ponce Inlet was on the bottom of dependency, total dependency on property taxes. So I just want to make sure that we understand that, you know, as we continue to spend, we have to put in some controls. We have to look at line items. We have to look at luxuries versus needs. And I would like to also, you know, Atlantic Avenue is in poor repair. We got shoulders that are in need of fixing. We've had some accidents. We also have sidewalks that are in poor repair. We've got other expenditures, and we really need to look at, you know, what our priorities are. But we cannot sustain the level of anticipation of property values continuing to go up. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak who may not have filled out the pink slip? If not, seeing none, then citizen participation is closed.
Excuse me, Mayor. Can I just, I just want to correct one thing. South Atlantic Avenue is under the jurisdiction of Volusia County. It's owned by them and maintained by them. Everything except south of Beach Street. I just want to make that clear.
Yeah. Him. Then it's him. Thank you, Mike. Item 6, proclamations, presentations, and awards. Well, we have the good fortune of recognizing a very, very special resident who has lent her time, experience, and her talents to our Historic and Archaeological Preservation Advisory Board and the Cultural Services Historic Preservation and Tree Advisory Board, and that's Elvira Labar. I have said on so many occasions that our volunteers on our advisory boards play such a crucial role in providing guidance to us, the council, so that we make informed decisions that are best for the community. I'd like to share just a small part of Elvira's contribution to our town, and I'm pleased to say she is here with us this afternoon. So Elvira has volunteered with the town for 12 years. She was appointed to the Historic and Archaeological Preservation Advisory Board on August 22, 2013. The Historic and Archaeological Preservation Advisory Board and the Parks, Recreation, and Tree Advisory Board were combined into the Cultural Services Historic Preservation and Tree Advisory Board on August 23, 2018, thereby disbanding and ending Elvira's term with the original board. And she has served on the Cultural Services Historic Preservation and Tree Advisory Board from August 23, 2018 to August 15, 2025. And we will miss Elvira's participation, not only on the board, but within our community. Elvira, can I ask you to please join me at the podium?
Thank you.
for everything, and we have a beautiful thank you, and we are going to miss you very, very
much.
Well,
I miss all of you, too.
Yes, and we have, look at this beautiful plaque, and it really it sets forth the dates, of course, of all of your boards, but it also expresses our appreciation to you. And please, if you'd like to say a few words, or you don't have to, it is up to you.
Well, I want to thank everyone for this. It's been my honor and pleasure to serve on the board, but this is a new chapter in my life, and I'm looking forward to it. So thank you very much. I'll miss all of you.
Thank you, and we'd love to take a picture.
Okay.
And now we have a presentation today by our County Councilman, Vice Chair Matt Reinhart, and he'll be providing us with an update on county activities. Vice Chair?
Thank you, Madam Mayor, distinguished council members, staff. I appreciate that very much. First off, before I get started, consider me poked. I got it. See, we'll get that information back to our public works. Thank you for letting me know. I will ask, if there are issues like that, please email me. If you need my information afterwards, I'd be more than happy to give it to you. And in that email, if you could give me specific areas. So this way we can have staff go to those areas directly. Thank you very much. So good evening, or good afternoon again. I'm still stuck on last night. It is always my honor to join you here as your District 2 representative, Vice Chair for the County Council. I will say Ponce Inlet is more than a town within Volusia County. It's a close-knit community, and I've come to know it and love it very much, and I appreciate the time you take for me and the time I can give back to your community. It's known for its pristine beaches, strong environmental stewardship, and the way that's deeply connected to the water. Today I want to give you an update on just some projects. I'll try to keep it as brief as possible. I know that you have a busy agenda. There are a couple areas that I've been known to expand on because they're personal pet peeve projects of my own. So I'll try and curve that down a little bit and try not to be so excited about it. But nonetheless, you're ready for me. You're ready. The first thing I want to talk about is our North Beach sand placement project. As I've said before when I brought this information up, our coastline sustained quite a bit of damage as a result of the storms. And we're still receiving it as a result of a storm that, thank goodness, missed us, but we're getting some damage as a result from it. Sand is sacrificial. We know that. But we tried to give it the base that it needed after those storms. When I first started talking about this some while back, the county had entered into an agreement with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Every 5 or 6 years, those of you that don't know, the Army Corps of Engineers does a dredging project of the entire intercoastal waterway. And what they do with that traditionally is set it off into the Atlantic Ocean from anywhere from 8 to 12 foot of deep of water. They have never, ever in their lifetime that I'm aware of have ever been convinced to change that or change their permit location to somewhere else. We were able to, because of the storm damage we sustained, and a lot of contacting our state government and our feds, we were able to convince the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to change their permit to dump it here in Ponce Inlet and then be able to relocate that sand to those areas that were most vulnerably hit. The first project initially, when first reported, when we did the Taylor engineering study, was supposed to give us 770,000 cubic yards of sand. However, since that study and since we started the dredging project, it has given us anywhere from 1.7 to 2.2 million cubic yards of beach-compatible sand, which is awesome. So the first project that was doing that was completely funded By the way, the $70 million from FDEP from the direction of Governor DeSantis. So this was no cost bearing, no share cost bearing from local taxes from our community. So this is all done from that 100% of it. Usually when you do these projects, you have to have a 50-50 match. We had to have no match money of local tax dollars for that, which was really, really good. The second project that we're doing is a 550,000 cubic yard dredging project that we're doing through FIND, the Florida Inland Navigational District. And the placement of that sand comes from the money from that first project I talked about. That will deliver sand to south of the inlet in the New Smyrna Beach area, those areas that were hit from the same storms. And then the third project, which we're pretty excited about, which we haven't released, but there was enough money of the $70 million that we had dedicated towards that sand placement. There's almost half of it left over. So we're able to do a third project. And that third project, we're going to hire the same company that's doing the dredging out of Jacksonville. And it will do the shoal area of the intercoastal waterway, which should give us about, well over another million cubic yards of beach-compatible sand. That being said, as you know, you saw the sand placement where it was, and we worked our way south from Sunglobe Pier. We will be able to go north of Sunglobe Pier as a result of that. So that was pretty good news. And then also from the same money, you start seeing now the placement of seagrass. That is important to be able to contain that or continue that sustainability of that beach sand. The trucks, before they started moving, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers conducted an unprecedented that successful dredging project. But also what we're being directed to do, we have directed staff to do a feasibility study. The feasibility study, also being funded from that, will also being funded from that $77.7 million, will conduct a long-term multi-generational coastal protection strategy solution that will stand the test of time. So that gives us kind of like a 50-year, what that study will do is how to anticipate when we have this damage for a 50-year term, which is kind of like an insurance policy for our beaches, which is good. We launched a survey earlier this year, and we received 12,000 responses as a result of that. We will be doing another survey coming up, so I encourage everyone to participate. That information is taken seriously. We want to hear from our citizens and what we think that feasibility study, what it should take care of with respect to our beaches. So if you have input from that, please make sure that your voices are heard. We will post the times and when that is to be delivered to the public at a later time. Keep watching our website to make sure that you know when that is. I kind of got away from that, didn't I? There we go. Okay, and I talked about the sand placement. One important thing that I want to talk about here, when you see the seagrass, is, you know, we have that study being done, that feasibility study done, to be able to find ways to protect our sand, protect our beaches in the future from future storms. Because as we all know, the storms, it's not a question of if it will hit again, it's a question of when. That being said, we, and I'll get into it in a few minutes, where we're starting something at our jail that I want to utilize, and I'll get more into that as I get to that slide. Where we can grow that seagrass and not have to purchase it, and we can plant those seedlings at the use of a labor provided from our inmates, so which I think is going to be a major, major cost savings to the community as well. We are actually paying for this, for a company to do this. The sand placement is being done from Halifax Paving. It wasn't the cheapest to do, but I will tell you that having a local business, that's important to our community as well, so we hired them. They have done a phenomenal job with the placement of that sand, and they have the equipment to do it. So I talked about the feasibility study. I'm glad you're moving this and not me. So next thing I want to talk about real quick is the flood mitigation infrastructure. In addition to the infrastructure planning, we also just launched the Transform 386 Hurricane Milton homeowner recovery on August 1st. We had money that was funded to us from the state and feds for Hurricane Ian and Nicole, and it was exciting to hear that we received even more money to help those that sustained damage as a result of Hurricane Milton. that will be compounded into that fund. The program provides options such as home repair or placement, reimbursement for completed repairs, voluntary property buyouts in high-risk flood areas, and the match for Elevate Florida and FEMA mitigation. So I know it doesn't pertain to you, but just to give you an example, some of the funds that were used from the previous Transform 386, the grant process, your neighboring city down in South Daytona took advantage of that. We all know that they sustained quite a bit of damage, especially in their Lantern Park area. They have four projects that will be starting at any point, which will do the property buyouts, and they'll be able to create larger retention areas for the purpose of collecting that stormwater, which is major. I think that's going to be hugely beneficial to them. The next thing I want to talk about, I talked about that. Thank you very much. Lighthouse Point Park and Boardwalk updates. Lighthouse Point Park is one of Ponce Inlet's treasures. Absolutely. A place where residents and visitors can take in their views, enjoy the water, and connect with nature. After decades of service, the park's elevated boardwalks are ready for a new chapter, and the county is moving forward with a comprehensive plan to restore and enhance the beginning from them beginning next year. The work will reconstruct key sections of the durable composite decking and handrails, add two new connector segments to the bridge existing gaps, and modernize scenic overlooks, waterway access points, pavilion areas, and parking, as well as a launch for kayaks, because I know that was brought up before, and we will have that as well. We understand that the natural environment of Lighthouse Point Park is truly special, so construction is being planned to minimize the impacts as much as possible. We all know that with construction, there are some impacts, and we apologize for that in advance, but in order to make it better, that's going to be necessary to do. In the short term, we'll be able to open up the jetty connector in May with approximately 144 feet of new wooden decking, restoring safe public access to the North Jetty. Additional repairs to the concrete jetty deck have been scheduled and should be kicking off as soon as the ocean conditions allow us to do so. With the recent storm that's out there, it makes it a little difficult to do. At the same time, we're working closely with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to pursue a permanent storm-resilient concrete link to the jetty, extending the jetty deck farther west, God bless you, outside the coastal impact zone. The larger project will require federal permits and careful coordination. So timeline, if you all noticed when we dealt with some of our storm damage, no offense to the feds, but they do take a little bit longer to get those permits through. So we're working we've already started that process, so hopefully we can kick it off as scheduled. Next slide, please. Oh, there we go. The invasive plant removal. Protecting the natural beauty and ecological health of Ponce Inlet is a responsibility that we do at the county level, as you do here in Ponce Inlet, take very seriously. Next month, Volusia County will begin its routine invasive plant species removal at Lighthouse Point Park, a process essential to preserving the park's natural habitat. One of our main targets is the well-known Brazilian peppers, and I've been here at meetings before when that issue has been addressed, a fast-growing invasive species that aggressively displaces native plants, reduces biodiversity, and alters the natural balance of coastal ecosystems. Left unchecked, it can take over the entire area, and that's not something we want to do. The work not only safeguards the park's unique ecosystem, but also enhances the experience of residents to be able to enjoy the area. Next slide, please. Thank you. The Marine Science Center, as you know, Volusia County's Marine Science Center is right here in beautiful Ponce Inlet, just reopened in June after a major $4.2 million renovation. The closure that took nearly 10 months, and that's 9 months and 29 days too long, gave us the chance to create a new and existing feature, a living shoreline, a reef exhibit, a working coral lab, and an artificial reef showcase. I will say what's not in the notes here is that we had scheduled a ribbon cutting for that event, which got postponed. Full disclosure, they put in the new tank. They noticed that it was expanding, so therefore had to remove the water and be able to reconstruct that so that that ribbon cutting, the park is open. I encourage all those of you to visit it. The ribbon cutting, the official ribbon cutting, will take place in October, from what I understand. The center is more than just an attraction. It is one of the busiest animal rescue hospitals in the state, serving as a hub of marine rehabilitation, environmental education, and scientific outreach. Its reopening is not just a testament to conservation, but a resource to our community can be inspired by. Next slide, please. Okay, there's a lot of controversy about this one. I kind of breezed over this last night as I gave this presentation to Daytona. I probably get a ton of phone calls about this and emails. We, as you know, if you work with an outside vendor, sometimes you have that difficulty. It is getting better, I assure you, and it will get better. If you do have issues with it, please feel free to reach out to me, because squeaky wheel gets the oil, so to speak, and we've been able to help individuals navigate through that process. The idea, obviously, is to those that are residents here can enjoy the beaches and the parking on the beaches for free. It is a revenue maker, I will tell you that, which helps reduce the tax burden. Full disclosure, we anticipated being able to make a little bit more than what we did. That being said, it's still a plus, but it's a negative when you look at the whole aspect. So hopefully we'll be able to make up those costs. And I'm going to move on from that to, there we go. Now this is what I'm going to try and curb. I get very excited about this. The Second Chance Initiative, those of you that don't know, my career prior to council was a 30-year career in corrections. Started in 1986 and as a CO, and I retired as a warden in 2017. Overseeing a facility or two facilities that accommodated about anywhere from 1,300 to 1,500 inmates and about 350 staff. One of the things that I did during my tenure was inspect other jails throughout the state of Florida. And I made it down real quick, briefly, made it down to Manatee County, and I was thoroughly impressed with their operation that they have there. They have a full functioning inmate farm, both hydroponic and land. And they didn't just stop at the farm, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that. They started with other programs such as embroidery, sewing, diesel repair, things of that nature. And I could go on for hours about some of the stuff that I'd like to see happen up here in Volusia County. I came back as a lieutenant doing those inspections, and I told my superiors, I said, this is a very exciting project. We're not only being able to reduce the food costs and the housing, what it costs to house an inmate, which saves as a tax burden for the citizens of Volusia County, but it also teaches the inmates trades, which I think is vital to reduction of recidivism. The more that they learn, the better. This way they can hopefully not have that element of returning back to custody because they couldn't find a job. So there was no appetite for it back then. So when I got elected, I made that a primary concern, a primary issue that I wanted to see go forward. We created the Second Chance Initiative with the idea of the farm. At the time that we brought this up, almost 2 years ago, we did not have the staffing levels to secure that. So I said, well, I didn't want to just sit on my hands while we waited for those staffing levels to increase. So we started in collaboration with the Port Orange South Daytona Chamber, a inmate job fair. And we started that in the jail, which had never been done before, and we're starting to see that happen in other jails now, so this is good. It gives us the opportunity to invite our local community and our businesses the opportunity to come out and talk to these inmates before they actually are released. We tried to identify inmates that were being released anywhere from 20 to 30 days from that time frame, so this way the businesses, they are interested in those individuals, that they didn't have to wait forever for them to be released from incarceration to secure their job. It wasn't for the purpose of them to fill out an application and do a traditional interview. What it was done is just hopefully to remove that stigma associated when you hear an inmate that is currently or has been previously incarcerated, when you hear convicted, you associate that with a serious offense. We are not introducing this to inmates with those serious offenses. We are doing it for those inmates. You know, by the grace of God, any one of us in our teenage years could have been in that same situation, and we all know it, so myself included. So that being said, I was a complete angel. I don't know about everybody else. But nonetheless, we wanted to be able to help reduce that. So it started out with a few businesses that participated. The last job fair that we did in August, as we do them every quarter, our one-year anniversary, we did invite businesses such as Trader Joe's, Coca-Cola, Amazon, Waste Pro, None of them showed up, but they did display interest in it for future job fairs, but we are getting Career Source involved, which opens up doors for many more of these. So we didn't want to sit on our hands again, so we collaborated in coordination with Daytona State, and we created a virtual welding program for these inmates to learn welding. They also helped us with securing some barbering chairs. We got a local barber to come out. We started a barbering program. We are getting ready to start a cosmetology program for the female inmates. You see up there forklift certification. You're thinking, oh, do we want inmates driving forklifts? Well, we do. We want them to learn that because we have a facility out there in Daytona Beach called Amazon that's hiring 1,000 people, and they're willing to hire former inmates. So that's good news. Again, just to put things in perspective, the average cost to house an inmate in your jail here in Volusia County is $111.95 per day per inmate. That's your tax dollars. So if we can reduce that recidivism, even by a small amount, that helps us keep that tax burden down, which I'll get to in just a minute. So that is underway. The farm now, we did get the go-ahead. They will be doing a presentation, I believe, at our next council meeting for the rest of my colleagues so they can see. I will tell you this, that when you think about startup costs for a function like that, we are funding the entire thing at zero cost to the taxpayers. How are we doing that? Anytime an inmate buys a commissary item, a candy bar, whatever, the profits from that go into what they call an inmate welfare fund. The inmate welfare fund is in the millions right now in Volusia County. So we can start the startup cost for this farm at zero cost to the public, which I thought was extremely good news. So again, I could continue to go on, but I'll leave it at that. Next slide, please. JetBlue. JetBlue is soaring back to Daytona Beach with two daily nonstop flights, one to JFK and one to Boston, beginning in December. They will fly two flights out of Daytona to those locations. This in connection to our other services from Delta, American, Breeze, and Avelo gives us five now airlines that are in that. We're not in our heyday yet like we were back in the 80s where I think we had 10, but we are going in the right direction. There has been communication with them about securing some flights through JetBlue to the Caribbean because there is a lot of Hispanic population that desires that. They want to see how this turns out first, and then those talks will resume. Next slide. Okay, in the budget. Finally, a word on our fiscal stewardship, because no matter how exciting a project is, it has to be financially sustainable. The council is in the process of developing the budget for the 25-26, and public hearings will begin at our meetings next month. I'm proud to say that the general fund millage will remain flat. That is a proposal when we discuss the trim rate. All other rates will either stay flat or go to rollback. So there are no increases to your taxes. Now, I will point out, this happened in my first 2 years. You know, we've always either gone to a partial or full rollback, this being a partial. And they said, you know, I looked at the trim notice. I saw that you're doing that. And I'm very excited about that. But why did I pay more in my taxes? Well, your values go up. So I'm not backing the bus up over Larry Bartlett, but, you know, he does for me. You know, we have that where we joke with each other, but your values go up, so therefore your tax base goes up. Couldn't you imagine if we did increase it, what your taxes would be? So that is our goal, and that is my goal, being conservatives, to be able to continue to keep that. One thing that, full disclosure, that I'm... I know there is some communication, if you watch the council meetings, about the decrease in the fire fund. I personally am not in favor of that. And the reason being, I think there's far too much that we have put on hold. To give you an example, Station 15 in Daytona Beach, we've been talking about building a new facility for them because it's utilized as a training facility in addition to a fire station. Some people would say, so what? You know, that's a good thing. Working at the jail and being under public protection, because at the time fire was under public protection, I visited that facility several times, and the chaos that is involved when you're trying to do training at the same time to give your citizens at fire services is a little frustrating. So we've been talking about that for probably 30, 40 years to build them a new station. I think it's high time that we do it. And I think that if you remove some of the funding to do that, it makes it a little bit hard to do. So public protection is very, very near and dear to my heart, being involved in that field for 30 years. I will continue to support that, and I have no problem going on record to say that. So thank you very much for that. I think that's okay. In closing, Ponce and LaVolta County share the same shoreline, the same economy, and the same vision for a stronger, safer, and more prosperous future. That I hope I gave you enough information. I enjoyed myself doing this, and I hope I didn't take up too much of your time.
No, we're very appreciative to be brought up to date on the highlights from the county. Vice Chair, we appreciate everything that you and the other county council members do with our shared constituents and our shared interests. So thank you so very much. We really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I just want to say something, Matt. The town has been doing a podcast for about the last couple months, and podcast 5 just went out yesterday.
Yes, sir.
And it's a 44-minute podcast with Jessica and our town assistant, Becky, going over a lot of the things you talked about concerning the refurbishment and everything. So if anybody's interested, go to the podcast 5 and listen to it. It is really, really good and backs up everything that you said with Jessica.
Thank you very much. If I could point out one more thing, September, if you want to learn more about how the Second Chance Initiative benefits Volusia County, I did a story on InFocus for Channel 13. That will air in September, a 30-minute presentation about that. So, or, you know, I'm kind of excited to talk about it. You want to lose about 30 minutes to 3 hours of your day, let me know, and I'll gladly speak to you about it. So thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Okay, we are on our proclamation reports, 6C. The following proclamations will be presented during the month of September 2025. In recognition of Patriots Day, I will be presenting a proclamation declaring Thursday, September 11th, as a day of remembrance. And in recognition of information technology professionals, I will present a proclamation to the Ponce Inlet IT Department declaring Tuesday, September 16th, as National IT Professional Day. And copies of these proclamations may be viewed at the town kiosk. Now, item 7, we have 3 items on the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull one of the items?
No.
Anyone in the audience? Seeing none, I move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Item 8, this is an update on the town's vehicle lease program and request for direction on the program's future. This item has been continued from the July 15th, 2025 Town Council Budget Workshop. Chief?
Good afternoon, Mayor, members of Council. Like you said, this is a continuation from the past budget workshop. This is your opportunity to get an update on where we were with the program, where we are, and what could or could not be in the future. I have Jacob Romig from Enterprise Fleet here, and he is going to give you a very brief update on the program and give you an opportunity to ask any questions you like about it. He's the subject matter expert. So with that, Jacob.
Thank you.
Hi, good afternoon, Mayor. Good afternoon, Council. Good afternoon, staff, townspeople. My name is Jacob Romig. I'm with Enterprise Fleet Management. I think a little over 3 years ago, I presented to Council with the idea of implementing a partnership with Enterprise Fleet Management, and so now is our opportunity to let you know how it's going. And so with that said, we'll get started. The impetus for the program and the reason why the town looked at it in the first place was just a recognition that when you fail to plan, you plan to fail. And so they saw that with the fleet, that there was some older vehicles, and there's always a conundrum when it comes to replacing older vehicles because they're not worth a lot of money, and yet they cost a lot to maintain. And so if you have a strategy to look at the target life cycle and execute that strategy effectively, You can reduce the total cost of ownership for town vehicles and provide staff with safe, reliable, and fuel-efficient vehicles. So that was really kind of the start of the conversation. And then we looked at how Enterprise could help the town execute, formulate, and execute that strategy. So if we can go to the first slide, please, that would be great. So the value proposition for Enterprise, I'm sure you've heard of Enterprise Rent-A-Car. I'm sure you've all rented from Enterprise Rent-A-Car, and we appreciate that. But Enterprise has roughly over 1 million vehicles in its fleet, and so you can imagine the amount of strategy that goes into that fleet. And the idea is that you can piggyback as a town on the infrastructure and the expertise that we have in looking at the industry on a daily basis. So point number one is Enterprise helps the town by doing some fleet analysis, by looking at what's going on in the industry, looking at the cost of vehicles, looking at the resale market of town-owned vehicles, and helping them identify the right vehicle for the right period of time. The next thing that Enterprise does really well is remarket our vehicles. A lot of people don't know this, but on the rental car side, Enterprise makes just as much money on the resale of the vehicles as they do the rent. And so having a team in place to sell those vehicles and maximize the resale is very important to Enterprise, and we recognize that it's an also important thing for our customers. So that's something that we do really well. We build relationships with local dealers, and we know where to sell those vehicles to get top dollar. We also provide a maintenance management program, and I'll go into that in the next slide, but it's important for the town because the town doesn't have its own garage, utilizing outside vendors, and sometimes it's a challenge to understand when they submit a repair order exactly whether or not the repair is even necessary, what the repair should cost, et cetera. And we have a team of national, our ASC certified technicians, or it's our national service department, and they vet every repair before it even gets to the town to ensure that the pricing is where it should be. And then finally on leasing, and I know leasing is kind of a taboo term sometimes, but really to set your minds at ease, the type of lease that we do for the town, it's an open-ended lease structure in which the town, there's no maintenance, mileage penalty, there's no fixed term, it's an open-ended lease structure, and the town receives all the proceeds back from the time in which it sells vehicles minus what you owe. So all we're doing is funding the appropriate life cycle of the vehicle, and the town gets the proceeds at term. Happy to answer any questions when we get to that. But one thing I will mention is Enterprise, we're flexible. We understand that funding is one part of the program, but it's not everything. And so I'll get into that in a minute, but we have flexible funding structures that the town can take advantage of. Next slide, please. All right, so a little bit on the maintenance. So our National Service Department, in 2024, the town spent roughly $45,000 in maintenance on town-owned vehicles. Our National Service Department saved roughly 12% in maintenance costs for the town. And I'll say that a majority of the repair orders were not even, you didn't even have to be involved. None of the staff had to even be involved with that. We did that on your behalf. They took the repair in, the driver took it to that shop. The shop finished the repair, the driver went on their way, and the town achieved savings. So that's how the program is intended to work. Thankfully, the town has some newer vehicles in its fleet now, so the maintenance has gone down significantly. The program is still providing savings, but you know, the big thing is to provide savings for maintenance. The best way to save money on maintenance is to not spend it at all, and the best way to do that is to have appropriate target life cycles for your vehicles. And so to see that number go down is really encouraging. Let's go to the next slide, please. All right, so we talked about remarketing, we talked about vehicle disposal. So Enterprise handled the resale of both town-owned vehicles. We did sell one leased vehicle that the town had. You can see the results up there. We returned in August 23 to 24, you sold 5 vehicles through Enterprise. Average sale price close to $6,000, and the total proceeds back to the town of roughly $25,000. This year, we've sold a few more, and the total proceeds have been close to $40,000 in proceeds from the sale of town-owned vehicles. One of those vehicles was a leased vehicle. I will show you how the math works in a future slide, but that's how we're doing on remarketing. And if we can go to the next slide, please. By the way, feel free to interrupt if you have any questions.
Yeah, I do.
Oh, sorry. Great. Perfect timing.
I was going to write down the slide. Can you go back to that last slide?
Sure.
Okay. And you mentioned that, and I think it was a 2022 Ford F-250. It was actually the first vehicle we had.
Correct.
And it was leased for 1 year.
13 months specifically.
13 months. Okay. Yep. Close enough. So are you going to show us what we actually paid and then come back to get the profit? Because
yes, sir.
Initially, we were told that it was like $11,000, but after you calculate what we paid, my math came out to like $3,000. So I'd like to see where that is, if you don't mind.
Not at all. I have that actually in a future
perfect.
Slide.
Thank
yes,
you.
Sir. Yeah, you got it. All right. So this was the original fleet profile. So when I first met with the town, we dug into the fleet profile for the town. I put this together when we first met in 2023. So you had three vehicles that were over 10 years old. You had five vehicles. You had another 10 vehicles that were 7 years or older. And I think, and I don't want to put words into the staff's mouth, but I know they were experiencing some headaches associated with maintaining those older vehicles. And so one of the things that I always look at are the safety features that are available in newer vehicles. Thankfully, most of the vehicles did have electronic stability control and side curtain airbags. Those are critical safety features that you want in every vehicle. So fortunately, most of the vehicles did have that safety features, but over half the vehicles had no rear view cameras. And I can tell you, for me at least, backing up, having a rear view camera can be very handy in mitigating some of those fender benders. And so that's what the fleet looked like originally. And if we come to the current fleet profile for the town, which is on the next slide, sorry. you can see that the fleet is newer, that you're definitely, the momentum is headed in the right direction. You have newer vehicles, 12 newer vehicles here. You have three vehicles that are 10 years or older, but it's certainly headed in the right direction with an average holding period currently of 8.1 years. And that's right about where you would want to be from a life cycle perspective. You want to be in that 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old time frame for vehicle replacement. So I'd say that the town is definitely doing a much better job with that. If we could go to the next slide, please. Okay. So one of the things that, is kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Intuition would tell you to run a vehicle for as long as you possibly can. And while that method works fine for an individual, for a household, fleet is just a different animal. And vehicles just run differently. They have different equipment. They have different specifications. And so you have to approach it a little bit differently than you would your own personal vehicle. This slide just illustrates the fact that the 2011 F-150 that the town had at the beginning that didn't have those safety features, the MPG was okay, but it wasn't great. And now we are moving to a newer vehicle that has those safety features, that's much more fuel efficient. And from a cost perspective, there really isn't a massive difference in the total cost to run that newer truck. I understand that, of course, newer trucks cost more, than to just run an old truck. But once you calculate the difference between the maintenance and depreciation of those older trucks, you'll recognize that it ends up being cost effective to run those newer vehicles. If we could go to the next slide, please. So this actually illustrates it, that quantifies those costs. So basically, one of the things that and understandably, you want to understand what the interest and the costs associated with leasing vehicles is. It's an important thing for you to see. We're very transparent with the cost structure at Enterprise. So you'll notice that in the one column for the leased vehicles, the lease charge, and that's not the lease payment, by the way. The majority of the lease payment goes towards depreciation or principal of the vehicle. So what I outlined is the lease cost, so the interest cost of running those vehicles, and it's approximately $2,800 a month in interest payments that the town is making for these 11 leased vehicles. And then we have to consider the cost of maintenance, because that's also a factor. So that's $200 a month in maintenance that you're spending to maintain those vehicles. And the total is $3,000 a month that the town is spending in cost of these newer vehicles. When we compare that to the cost of the older vehicles, just the cost to maintain the vehicles, so you own them, you're not making any payments, you're not making any interest payments, they're owned by the town, but they still cost money to maintain. So it's roughly $1,800 a month in maintenance over the last 12 months that the town has spent to maintain these vehicles. And so it's cost the town roughly $1,200 more per month total to have these newer vehicles versus the older vehicles. Certainly that's a cost, but I think that when you consider all the advantages of having a newer fleet that's safe and reliable, I think that it's a good investment in those dollars.
Again, that's just maintenance and interest.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yep. Yep. So the principal, we have it on the lease deck. I'll be happy to share that with you. But it's roughly $700 a month in depreciation per vehicle that goes towards the principal of that vehicle.
Mr. Fields, if you don't mind, I think your questions are excellent. No, I can't hear the questions, for starters. Is this something that could wait to the end of the presentation? Are you okay, or do you want it now? Then please stand up. And
Steve Fields, Six More. So the initial there was no initial down payment?
No.
But you're saying the depreciation is $700 a month. What does that mean?
So that's the principal. So if it's a $30,000 vehicle and you're depreciating it over a period of time, 60 months, it's to take it from that $30,000 down to a residual value. It's just the principal in the vehicle.
So do we pay that?
Yes.
That's on top of this.
Well, yes, but it goes back to the town. It's principal. So it's similar with your mortgage payment. Part of your mortgage payment goes towards the principal of the home, correct? And part of it goes towards interest.
You should have that next column, because if you're saying $700 a month, that's what? $8,400 a year is someone we have to pay you.
Yes.
Why isn't that part of the cost of this equation here?
Mr. Fields, if we could, let's move on here. But all of your questions will certainly be answered. But I think we need to get through the actual program here,
sure.
The presentation.
Yeah, and I think, like, when you're talking about financing versus purchasing, this is a great question. The point of depreciation is whether you pay for it up front. So if you were to write a check for $30,000, that's all principal. It's the same pot of money. Or you space it out over any period of time, whether that's 10 months, 30 months, 60 months, whatever that number is, that's still a cost, but it's not an additional cost. The town is not spending that over and above what it would have spent in cash on that same exact vehicle. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay, great. Moving on to our next slide. So this is exactly what you were looking for, Mr. White. So the total lease payments for the vehicle was roughly $9,400. You had it for 13 months. We sold it, the proceeds, we didn't sell it for $11,000. That was the proceeds that were over and above what we sold it for. I don't remember exactly what you sold it for and exactly what you owed. But the difference between what we sold it for and what you owed was $11,000. And so the town actually received a profit of $1,500. So it paid for itself, and then the town actually profited $1,500 from the lease of the vehicle.
And again, there was a misstatement made, because it showed in a presentation before, not from you guys, that we actually received $11,000. That's the reason I was bringing it up. So when I did my math, I came up with $3,000, so you kept 15, so we were close. Thank you.
Yes, of course, yes. And really, that's like when you look at any kind of finance structure, whether it's a lease or whether it's a traditional finance, what you owe at the end, whether it's zero or whether it's a residual value, what you sell it for minus what you owe, those are the proceeds that go back. Whether you pay cash for a vehicle at the front, if you pay $30,000, then you own it for 10 years and you sell it for three, you made $3,000 back. So that's just how it, it's really from the town's perspective, when you're looking at cash versus financing, you can just choose to either pay for it all up front in 1 year, or you can choose to spread out those payments. The only addition